estate services, Lavazzi and Boob1.co.uk present the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast, episode 479. I can't remember a decent quote from this particular show, because I can't be bothered with quotes anymore. So what I wanted to do, I'll just say what I wanted to do is something that Sylvester McCoy's character played, but I couldn't be asked. Anyway, and here's She's Back. Which She's Back am I going to say first? There's three of them who couldn't be bothered to be on last week. Hang on, let's flip a coin. No. Alphabetically, Debbie Melrose.
Somehow I don't think the second coming happens here.
Oh, was that there? Kirsty Bissett.
I really want to follow up with that's what she said, but no. I won't. I'll follow it up with we don't have an auxiliary power to move next door.
Mary Lang.
Stop it. Stop it.
All right. Sorry, I'm only trying to do a podcast. And Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
This is an ambulance.
Yeah. Oh, I could have done one of the Master's quotes, couldn't I? The Doctor's half human.
Or you could have just gone, Doctor, because that works in any episode.
No.
This one would be, I always dress for the occasion.
That's what Kirby wanted to use.
What you used last time.
Yeah, which was?
Was, who am I?
Oh, did I? That's a good one.
I was thinking of that one, but I actually like to use that quote all the time of like, if my car won't start or this thing won't start up, I'm like, hey, how's it going? Oh, we don't have enough auxiliary power to move next door. I just always thought that's a funny line.
Lillian Robin anyway. Says, late again, and then the 20 Megabyte Dishes podcast.
Huh? And, we were talking about parties. Yeah.
And then we hadn't started by then, I don't think. And Terry Mars says, good evening, everybody. Merry Christmas, everybody. It's Christmas. Right then, so I'll tell you what I'm going to do with this particular, because I'd like to refer...
Are we going to do the dishes?
I would like to refer our listeners to episode 172 of the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, which can be found at the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.podbean.com, because there's a bit of an issue for some reason with the relevant apps. Doesn't appear. But if you go to the website, episode 172 is on there. It's great fun because we do an in-depth review on this particular story, the Doctor Who movie, with Daphne Ashbrook. So it's well worth listening to. We can't do that again. That sort of upstaged this particular episode. But so what I'm going to do, I'm not even going to play the DVD of the episode.
What?
I'm just going to talk about it from memory.
We didn't actually do a... we weren't watching along with that one.
Yeah, but we covered it enough.
Because I just listened to it. Also, we never asked... you never asked us what our opinions were.
Well, I will do. But don't worry, I will
and then,
do.
And then he went into a quiz. Oh, I missed the quiz.
My question is, if we're not doing this with the DVD, how the hell are we supposed to interrupt you?
Yeah.
No, I'm just going to do it from memory as best
and,
I can.
And it's too bad.
I just don't see that working. I don't see how the show's going to work in this fashion.
It's too bad that we don't have Robert along, because he was watching the Blu-ray.
Oh, yeah, maybe he likes his blue movies, doesn't he?
Well, with Daphne Ashbrook on, I mean, we couldn't have given honest opinions, could we?
Well, I don't know. I can't remember. Anyway, let's get really going. I'm going to talk about. I'm not going to go about. Oh, it starts with the title sequence, although it does. It's a very interesting title sequence in which the Eighth Doctor talks about stuff that happens before he arrives, like the rather bizarre trip to Skarov to pick up the Master's body. It was a bit of strange. I was just putting that obviously as a reference so they could talk about the Daleks, which they weren't allowed to use, and the fact that there was a sort of interesting history to the show for the fans.
Master.
What?
I happen to be quite fond of this particular arrangement of the theme.
It's not bad, is it? Certainly better than the previous one.
It starts with the middle eight is really nice.
Do, 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 did. No, it's okay. I can live with that one. It's much better.
Also,
than
also, if they didn't have permission to use the Daleks, how come they could say Daleks and the Daleks could
I
say
don't know.
Exterminate?
I don't know, but they weren't allowed to. Oh, it doesn't matter anyway. Anyway, so he talks about what's happened. They've got the doctor, so the master's remains in a rather pathetic looking casket, and the beautiful TARDIS console room and
wonderful.
Other rooms
wonderful.
Are sort of seen as the seventh doctor, who looks absolutely fab. On his own, though. It's a bit of a shame, isn't it?
This was so promising.
Yeah. They have the beautiful console and the rather pathetic 900-year diary. And little trinkets just sort of for us fans to sort of go, oh, that looks good. Oh, look at that. Because bearing in mind, we'd had been Doctor Who starved by the time this particular film came out.
Master?
Yes?
Why does everybody, when they are presented with a jelly baby, sniff it?
Even see what flavour it is.
It's going to be.
I'm not keen on the yellow ones, so I might sniff it. Although I'll probably see it's yellow.
They sniff it to find out. Also, a sniff and a slight onto it means that you get rid of any of the icing sugar before you eat it.
Yeah.
Ooh. Oh. Anyway, so
it can be rather powdery if they're
Yeah, it is.
And it's science fiction. Fantasy TV program.
I mean, every time it's done several times during this story.
Okay, we haven't even got into it yet. I'm just talking about the bit at the beginning where we see the TARDIS. Anyway,
Adam,
so it's
Adam. Adam, this is Kirby Bartlett Sloan. He's a pedant.
Anyway, so we then they cut to.
He can
God's
pick
sake.
On now. He's going to talk about something in the future. He's
no,
going
I'll just
pick on.
I'll just tilt to the right and look at the blooming football. It's just about to start the TV up there. Anyway,
yourself.
where did I get up to? Right. So then we cut to the hospital where it wasn't a hospital, wasn't it? It was the opera where Grace was watching. There's a conversation which some. Doctor says how wonderful this young Grace surgeon is. She's fantastic. Blah de blah de blah.
I really have to say that she's well rid of that guy.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, who gets tickets for the opera when your girlfriend's on call as a surgeon?
Yeah.
And then throws a hissy fit when she has to leave halfway through because somebody's dying.
Exactly.
I actually worked with a female physician who had a husband like that.
Oh.
Living with her, but was always very petulant, and he was a real loser.
Sounds
it. Robert Vance Jr. says, hi, all.
My mum used to be on call all the time.
Yes.
And, my dad was always like, cup of tea will be ready when you come home. I got the kids, don't worry. You know.
Anyway, so we just see that obviously she's got this lifestyle. And then we see another sequence of events involving the Chinese gangsters.
The Asian child.
Anyway, there's a group of Chinese gangsters who go around being all gangstery. And they've got some tools and stuff. So they go off and basically do some random gangster stuff. And they get involved in a little bit of a chase. Meanwhile, in the TARDIS, the master's gooey remains, how they ended up being gooey, slop out
maybe
of...
Maybe he's going to become a jelly baby.
Slop out of this little box.
And 2020 version, yeah.
Work their way into the console and make the TARDIS go a bit funny and taken out of time. And obviously, naturally, it's Doctor Who, they end up on Earth. But this time in the United States, it was Canada, but it was supposed to be in the United States. And just as the TARDIS arrives, the Doctor a bit sort of blindly just opens the door, doesn't check the monitor to see it's all safe. You know, see if there's no gangsters happen to be having a bit of a shootout outside.
And
just walk straight out of the TARDIS into a shower of bullets.
Adam, yes. I'm very upset with this scene, all of these previous scenes, because I think any Brit watching this confirms their worst assumptions about Americans, that these kids can run around with machine guns. We must look terribly lawless, too. I think they think we are anyway.
It's a science fiction fantasy TV show that needed a sequence that got the seventh Doctor killed. So they thought, well, they're in America, they might as well have some bullets.
Well, come on. Every Brit as a kid thinks America is just guns and lawlessness.
Yeah. See, so
I think that's what, and we particularly study like the Civil War and things like
okay,
that.
Okay, well, can we just say, but it works both ways. The Americans usually use British characters as sinister baddies in their production. So it does work both ways, but yes.
And your food is flavorless and you have messed up teeth.
Yeah, exactly. That too. Yeah.
Can't even drink tea properly. Yeah,
colonials.
Well, oh no, they know how to drink tea properly.
No, it's the Americans don't know about making a cup of tea. Robert Venge Jr.
That's what
says.
I wasn't sure who said.
Yes, yeah. Robert Venge Jr. says, "I sure like to know what the master's crime was. He's done so many. It looks like Anthony's master."
Good point.
And then
this time,
was there? It was like. Okay, fine. This time we're going to do it right.
Robert Venturini said, shot like a punk. Anyway, so we're back to Dr. Hooner. He's shot, and they all run off. I like the fact that obviously...
I was so shocked when I first saw that scene.
It was quite horrible, wasn't it, to see the doctor actually shot with physical bullets. Some of the gangsters run off. What I did like, the materialisation of the TARDIS was much more like it is now. But you still hear the traditional sound effect. They did mess around with it, remix it a little bit. But there are so many things that
were precursors to the modern series from this. The wind is it?
It's a transitional story, isn't it, Kirby?
Yes.
Yeah, but there are episodes in the previous season which were very transitional as well in the way they shot things and stuff like that. Anyway, so the Doctor's lying on the ground, and what's the name of the Chinese character? I can't remember his name now.
The Asian child.
Just say the Asian child. That'll work.
No, what's his blimmin' name?
Well,
Changli, right there. Now, you'll have to keep on reminding me of this, because I nearly met him, actually, in London, the actor that plays him.
Changli or something.
Changli. Anyway,
the actor liked one of my tweets a few years ago.
Well, yeah, he obviously needs some treatment for that. So he comes up to see if the doctor, the doctor, is all right, but he's actually more interested in robbing things off him. Cut a short story long, that's Kirby's motto. He ends up being carted off to hospital in an ambulance. Bruce is the ambulance driver,
Bruce.
Sloppy Master manages to sort of slop his way into the ambulance, and goes with Bruce and the doctor to the hospital. The doctor then gets some treatment. Grace is called in from her opera to because she obviously this chap's been shot in areas that are suitable for her expertise, a field of expertise. That's sort of where Fredo was looking.
I'm surprised that she didn't have more people staring at her in those pre-cell phone days with that thing going beep beep beep.
Yeah, but it wasn't pre-cell phone days, was it? Because this was set in 1999, so it would have been in almost like the rise of the cell phone, as you call it. Or as we call it in Great Britain, the mobile phone.
You carry a
They filmed it fairly... Go ahead.
Everybody's talking over each other. It's just like being on the show.
I'm just that it's a beeper, and all medical people on call had to carry a beeper.
Oh, I was carrying a beeper around that time, too.
All right, it's not a competition, Kirby.
Yours was obviously more annoying.
Do you know what that was? That was the pedantry alarm.
Anyway, Robert Venge Jr. says this would have been a great part for Ace being there. I agree. Ian Kirk says the Daleks hate all other life forms. The judge probably asked, "Do you find the accused guilty?"
Yes,
in answer to
we do.
Questions. Right, where do I get up to? All right, so the doctor's ends up in theatre. But they obviously do an X-ray on him.
Butterfly? The theatre?
They do an X-ray on him, and the nurse looking at the X-ray says, oh, he's got two hearts. And she's quite clear about that particular fact, but another bloke comes, oh, it's a double exposure. So you don't do another one to make sure, then. You just accept that that's a double exposure. Whatever,
there's no such thing as anyone with two hearts. We're not going to double check.
Well, this is obviously hearts back into Spear from Space, where this initially happened.
Well done.
So,
well, give yourself a ding.
Oh, I'll give a, there's a ding there. Anyway, so because obviously this is the Grace is an expert in her field. She has an audience to watch this rather disastrous operation. The doctor, quite handily for her, wakes up and tells her straight to her face, "I'm not human." But she takes no notice, despite the, you know, the two hearts, etc. Proceeds with the operation and basically kills him. Is that right? Did I cut that too short? There's some very interesting scene as he's trying to stay alive and trying to stop them from killing him.
Somehow, I don't think it's ever happened in real life that someone who looks human has said, "I'm not human."
Anyway, he's dead. So, but what the thing I didn't like about this, the subsequent scenes, because obviously there's bits where Chonley, what's his name again? He's sat in the waiting room waiting for news, and when it's heard that he's dead, he sort of says, "Oh, I'll just take it to his relatives." You know, he's horrible at this point. It's got to be said. So sort of, you know, he wasn't really going to call an ambulance. He sort of did it because he was sort of forced into it. And then he hangs around and tries to be a bit of a gravedigger, literally almost, you know. Anyway,
now, why did he hang around? Just for a bag of sonic screwdriver?
Yeah, a cool sonic screwdriver, though, wasn't it, Kirby?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought
it was first
time
we'd seen the sonic screwdriver since The Visitation.
No, but we saw it then. Anyway. So, the bit I didn't like is, so the doctor is wheeled into the morgue with these two idiots who are sort of, what are they called, orderlies or whatever they're called. The bit I didn't like is the way the larger orderly was disrespectful.
He's not an orderly. He actually has, he's a doctor, according
whatever,
to
whatever. I didn't like, I didn't think it was right or that a person in that position would be so disrespectful to essentially a dead body, whether it be a John Doe or whatever. That way, he was really like talking to him in a disrespective way, or whatever you call it. I don't know. I didn't like.
Actually,
I didn't think
Master,
that. What?
Actually, if you talk to medical people who deal with death, they do that, and they do it because of the fact that it's such a serious thing. It's a way of compensating.
Okay. I, to a degree, I accept that, but I didn't like that at all. I felt it was really sort of.
Well, I'm glad I didn't use that as my quote.
I don't know. Ian Kirk says, in prison, they call them cell phones. That was one of my jokes. You're not going to get a ding for that, because that's one of my jokes. Laurie Nick says, "Hi all, just going to say one thing about this. Will Sasso."
That's the doctor you were just talking about.
Anyway, so the doctor is, he's dead and...
he's getting better.
He's dead and stuff.
And then he regenerates in a very sort of face-wiggling round sort of way.
He does the most gurning of all gurning that Sylvester's ever done.
Yeah.
Because it's been...
if he had never enhanced. Before, it would have been fine. But it's like, now it's like, it just looks like Sylvester gurning. I'm like, is it enhanced or is it just
called it was a very snappy. Obviously, Paul McGann didn't want to do that much gurning because it was quite, there was lots of gurning from Sylvester and suddenly a tiny snippet of a gurn from Paul before his face arrived. And then he sits up and does the Kirk lighting on the eyes. I didn't mind the stuff that was going on in the background, where they're watching the film.
I like that.
That quirk quite nicely with the "he's alive" sort of thing. But, you know, he sits up and the light shines on his eyes, which was very Star Trek with when they used to have dark scenes with Kirk in it. They just shine the light on his eyes. Neil James says, "Good evening, friends." Really? Is it? It's raining at the moment.
Friends.
And there's more. Really looking forward to the McGann era.
we were waiting. It was just like, this is a really big dramatic pause then.
Anyway, so the doctor gets up and sort of staggers out. He forces, I don't know, he's very strong at this point.
No,
obviously,
this isn't
just regenerated.
A staggering story, sorry.
He very good. I suppose that's worth one. Very good. Staggers, but he's very strong. He's able to sort of punch through this chiller door. To get out, which freaks out everybody within thing. Of course, he's being typical Doctor, just regenerated, doesn't remember a thing, he starts staggering around. He eventually discovers, because there's a point where he goes, "Who am I?" But he eventually discovers, because this chap did mention he's going to, he's got some cosplay, isn't he?
Wild Bill Hickok.
That's a Wild Bill Hickok.
Yeah, Wild Bill Hickok. He says it about three
times. He does,
times.
Yes. So he finds the costume and puts it on. Didn't like the hat, didn't he, obviously. But
Can someone explain something to me?
No.
What?
Why is part of the hospital in ruins?
Most of them are in England.
You'd understand it if it was a British hospital, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Well, think back when the paramedic Bruce tells them, "I hope you've got a lot of money, you know, because you're going to this expensive hospital."
Mm.
But
yeah.
The people that work there are all idiots. Plus, they have this whole wing that is like totally rubbish. So it kind of flies in the face of what Bruce says. It's supposed to be a posh hospital. Yeah.
Yeah.
The problem with this hospital is it had recently undergone a change of ownership between the time that they scouted out this location and the time they came back to it. X-Files had been there and painted it all green inside.
Yeah, I was gonna mention this was the X-Files.
Oh, you weren't, were you?
Nah.
I just heard that one, did I?
Well,
oh,
Daphne
that's
mentioned
a shame.
It.
There's no fighting. I won.
He won. And I'm fighting. Yeah.
Now,
when
McGann pulls the Fourth Doctor scarf out, is that Lavarzi?
Anyway, so the Doctor, once he's in his clothes, starts wandering around the hospital and bumps into Grace, and he sort of remembers Grace. "I know you," and then sort of stalks her for a little bit. And
Creepy.
Yeah, real creepy.
Mm.
Meanwhile,
creepy, this whole hospital sequence.
Yeah. Meanwhile, another creepy sequence is when Bruce goes to bed and the Master enters his body and takes over his body, basically. Don't know why he ended up with green eyes because
Master.
What?
Of course, this is just being pedantic because someone's got to mention it. That's Eric Roberts' real wife.
Yes.
So?
Yes. No.
We know that.
So?
So it's okay that he kills her.
So anyway, so he takes over his body, but he gets up in the morning and it implies he's been up to all sorts of horrible things. Anyway, so he kills her, basically. He throttles her or does something horrible.
You should bring up the old quiz, because you asked us, what is the first thing that he says is the Master? And stuff like that.
Did I? Oh, well. Anyway, so he's now the Master, and he must find the Doctor, and goes off to try and find the Doctor. Of course, he doesn't realise the Doctor has indeed regenerated. The Doctor stalks Grace and just follows her around for a bit. And then, of course, he knows something's going on, because there's something weird happens with the window, which has been made sense to me, actually, to a certain degree. I know it's a science fiction fantasy TV show, but he's demonstrating that something's going wrong. Have I jumped ahead a bit here? But it came to my mind when he pushes the window and it all goes wibbly wobbly and he goes through the window.
Oh, you've gone way ahead.
Sorry, but can I just mention it now? We can come back to it later. I just thought that was a bit odd, because nothing else in the rest of the story went all wibbly wobbly or anything like that. Just this one window.
But it's to demonstrate that things are going wibbly wobbly, just like he lost 20 pounds in 20 minutes.
Okay. All right, so back to where we were.
There were some things on the news in the background. If you listen.
Sorry.
Yes. Both the Master and the Doctor die and regenerate at the same time.
Ah, that's never happened before and never will happen again.
I see Kirby's got a new ploy where he just keeps saying Master, 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 Master over Kirstine.
I'll give him a ding for that. That's very good. Robert Vance Jr. says he does the Jesus thing rising out of his tomb. He does. Clothing thing from Spearhead from Space. Again, that's I mentioned that. And Neil James says she's a bit sexy. Talking about you again, Kirsty, I think.
I think so.
Don't know what that reference is. Obviously likes Kirsty when she's doing her pedant stuff. Would that be correct to say?
What?
I think so.
When the Doctor's sitting in the waiting room before he sees Grace the first time, what's with the big close-up of the guy who looks like Winston Churchill?
Don't know what you're on about.
No
idea. Different close-ups. Why are you picking on that one?
Because it's weird. When
they're
it came
all weird. Up, is that one? When it looks like a nurse is talking to him, but there's no nurse around him. It's like she's saying something, but you can't make out what it is. But then you come back and he's sitting over there and she's way over there. It's like, what?
Anyway.
It's at 29 minutes in, exactly.
Anyway, the doctor eventually, I'm going to move on to the bit where he suddenly in the park realises who he is. I am the doctor, so I'm giving you a smooch. Because that's never happened in Doctor Who before, but it will happen
again.
Wait,
what, you're going to skip over the half-human?
They're all right. The bit you talked about with the bit where the master takes Chon Li, whatever his name is, into the TARDIS because he can, he's a Time Lord, and uses him.
He uses the
Eye of Harmony to shine a light into his eye to open up the actual Eye of Harmony, and then from that he's able to see the cornea of the doctor's eye that he's half human. We've explained this away, but by a malfunctioning chameleon arch, haven't we? But the master would have known about that, or would he? Because he's only just regenerated. But I hate that half human thing, because that was mentioned about three or four times in this story. Yeah. I really do. But we explained it. We decided to retcon it. It's a stupid thing. And whoever wrote that in needs a club over the head with this magic wand.
It was to make him more, I guess, appetizing to the
Americans.
Yeah, no, it's trying to turn him into Spock.
He's vested interest in here because he's part of us. You know,
it's pointless. Like, he's not supposed to be part of us, though, is he?
One of us is
companions. That's always been the case.
Dr. Spock.
Yes, indeed. Anyway, back to, where do I get? So he's used. Of course, Chan Lee thinks he's going to get something out of it, so he follows the master and believes the master's cock and ball story that the doctor has got his body. And of course, you'd believe that, wouldn't you? Anyway, moving on. So he's easily led into believing the master's the goodie, even though he's acting like a baddie. Then I don't know. The doctor, meanwhile, realizes he's the doctor. And he also realizes that they haven't got a lot of time left because conveniently midnight on the millennium, if they don't fix everything by then, there'll be the world will end, etc. So, where do I go? Of course. Oh, yeah, he's trying to find the doctor. He needs the doctor. So he uses the Eye of Harmony to look through the doctor's eyes and stuff like that. Yes.
Master, Mr. Neil James has a thing for Mrs. Pearson, apparently.
Yes, Neil James says the master's wife. She's lovely.
He's like, she's a bit sexy.
She is.
You thought it was me. Yes,
she is indeed.
Very, very nice. But apparently it's your wife.
Mm. So, the doctor and, what's her name? Oh, Grace, up at this big Millennium Bash thingy. Because he's realised the only type of clock he can have to be absolutely pinpoint accurate, even though he's got a TARDIS, is a atomic clock, is it? So he needs to get this atomic clock to save the world.
A beryllium clock.
Was it?
Beryllium.
Yeah, beryllium.
Beryllium clock, yeah. Anyway, he needs that to save the world.
A lot of those scenes where they're at the party, the New Year's party, remind me of
shame. Isn't that a shame? Does that mean we can move on?
Stargate? Are you going to bring up the Stargate episode?
No. Sorry, I didn't mean to do that.
Are you going to mention?
I don't do that
Stargate
anymore.
No, you obviously don't. No, it's why you just did it.
Where the guy makes himself young again.
The guy makes himself young again.
The Lazarus
experience.
The guy who makes himself young again.
Wow.
Robert Vance Jr. says, when the doctor walked through the glass door. Yeah, so that's more or less the point in which we talked about the doctor walking through the glass door.
It is explained.
Yeah, okay.
There are some things on the TV in the background while they're talking that you can hear them saying. There's been this unexplained phenomena and high tides, and so it's implied effects around the
globe. It's all nonsense.
Yeah. Anyway, the master ends up at the thing, and there's a little bit of a trying to chase each other around scenario. So eventually, via motorbike, the Doctor and Grace arrive at the TARDIS. And conveniently, there's the key above the P. I quite like that particular thing.
Key
there's
above
a little
the
cubby hole the P. And they get in, but very, very quickly, the Master turns Grace against everybody by making her eyes all black.
She's been possessed. When does that scene happen when that motorcycle policeman goes flying through the TARDIS?
That's near the end, isn't it?
That's so ridiculous.
It's shoehorned in there. Like, why was the cop coming towards them in the first place? Because it's a dead end.
It's okay. It's just a bit of fun.
It's about 1 hour and 2 minutes and 30 seconds.
Yeah, 83 minutes to fill. They've got to put a few stunts in.
Yeah. But the thing is, all right, eventually...
It was just a break in the action.
Yes, it was. It was fine. It's only a bit of fun. Anyway, Robert Bench Jr. says, the stuff he needs is mentioning the Galaxy Quest. I love that. That's available on Netflix as well. Can't wait to see what that. What?
One thing I like about... where they're finding the key above the P,
just the one.
It's the fourth Doctor spade shaped TARDIS key instead of the Yale lock.
Yes, it was. Well
done. And when I was watching with Fred the other night, she's going, "I want one of those."
Well, you can buy them. They are available.
Somewhere. I can't find it.
They are available. Look on eBay.
I know.
Get it 3D printed.
I already have one.
Can I move on?
Doctor Who store would have it.
Yeah. Can I move on now?
Oh, like Who Under Coda?
Maybe.
No, I'm thinking of Alien Entertainment. They have the Doctor Who store, and it's loaded with stuff.
Well, I do have one. It's just I've misplaced it.
Okay.
Maybe it's above the P.
Buy a new one. You'll find it then.
Can I move on? Anyway, right. So the Grace is possessed. And Doctor is sort of attached, he's clubbed over the head initially by Grace, so he's been able to be sort of have his eyes wedged open by this strange gadget. He's very easily, Chong Li, or whatever his name is, very easily sort of convinced that the Master is the baddie. But he gets sort of killed by the Master. And then there's a scene in which Grace also gets killed by the Master. Everybody dies.
And then the Doctor manages to save the day by doing what he couldn't do with Adric.
Yes.
Exactly. Anyway, so essentially there's a bit of a battle goes on, and the Master gets put into the Eye of Harmony thingy, and so basically gets swallowed up by the TARDIS. So he's in the TARDIS. Somehow. How he survived that, I really don't know, but he's the Master.
Gets indigestion later.
He gets worked out at some point in the time.
Do you know what my theory on that is? Because when he went into this Eye of Harmony, which is essentially some sort of...
I keep calling it the
singularity.
Eye of
Harmony. It's like a singularity, isn't it? That singularity split him up and he ended up in the Matrix and then got out of the Matrix, and I suppose, possibly. But there's so many weird things about this story that you can't really explain. Anyway, so the Doctor.
It's a science fiction fantasy TV.
And the Doctor saves.
Last week.
Doctor goes back in time and saves Grace and Chong Li, or whatever his name is. And
he should have gone back and saved Adric at the same time.
Yeah. Turns Chong Li into a nice little chap, gives him a little present, a bag of jelly babies, and he goes on his way. And then he offers
a bag of gold.
Offers Grace the chance. He offers Grace the chance to travel with him in the TARDIS, which it was quite odd in a way, where she was set up to be a long-term companion, that she said, "Nah, it's all right. You're right." Which I thought a bit odd. I know, obviously, that we've had incidences in which. More recently, Clara sort of decided she'd stay at home, and then because Jenna Coleman got a new contract, decided she would turn up for a couple of Christmas specials here and there. But
And I think Rose initially said no.
Rose indeed. Right then, but this does give me the opportunity to play this particularly clever bumper that I put together many years ago.
Oh yes,
come with me.
I can't. I'm going to listen to the 20 megabyte podcast.
You come with me.
Me come with you.
Yes.
Me come with you. It's tempting.
That's one of the best bumpers I ever put together for the show. Thanks to Daphne Ashbrook for playing her part in it.
Yes, and interestingly, I was almost completely synced with you watching the movie.
Aren't I clever then? Do I get a ding? Well, I'm getting one anyway.
Yes.
You've had more than anyone today.
Well, me?
Yeah. Yes.
That's the first one I've had.
No, you guys still have one,
don't you? Yeah, I told you to give yourself one earlier.
And
beg your
did?
Pardon? Right. Right, so Terry Mars says, tea time, Adam Pearson. I don't know if I'm talking about me or Kirby. Matthew Kressel, should he not be on the show, says Big Finish has multiple versions of the Eric Roberts Master split up and running around at one point. And this is a very exclusive recording. I don't think it's ever been played on the show before. It may have done. If it has, you have to be a proper long-term fan of this podcast to know that this has been played before. This is Daphne's bumper for Reese's show.
This is Daphne Ashbrook, and you are listening to Who is the Man podcast.
That didn't play properly. Let's do it again.
This is Daphne Ashbrook.
Hang on. What's this thing doing? It's not playing this is bit.
This is Daphne Ashbrook.
It's Apple.
And then when it did, Kirby talked over it. What a surprise.
This is Daphne Ashbrook, and you are listening to Who is the Man podcast.
Now, I was hoping that Peyton Ashbrook... was going to become a bigger star in the interim between her slightly weird appearance on the show during there and now, but that wasn't to be, because I could have said that Peyton was on it. Well, she was on it, but, you know, being she was a bigger star. I mean, but anyway, moving on. All right, so what do I think of the Doctor Who movie? Now, there's certain... I found it quite watchable, to be fair, but I was going to say that the half-human... issue it weighs heavily on my mind, especially as it was obviously put in for the Americans, and not Americans that may have been Doctor Who fans, because obviously Doctor Who fans that are Americans would probably be just as appalled as every other Doctor Who fan in the world. So I don't know why they put it in there. It was stupid. I thought Eric Roberts was very, very good as the Master. I didn't mind his American accent. The Doctor's accents changed left, right and centre. Didn't know why he had to have green eyes, probably because he was happy to wear the appendage. I thought it was quite good as the Master. I thought the acting all round was very good. I loved the now more up to date special effects, and I quite liked the atmosphere that they generated for the locations and everything. The TARDIS is beautiful on the inside and bigger. Loved seeing Sylvester. Pardon?
It is bigger on the inside, you know that.
Love Sue and Sylvester, because he was in it for about 20-odd minutes, so he's almost there for another classic series episode. it was a bit of a shame that we didn't... Again, we got lots of... I liked having lots of Sylvester, but not enough McGann, bearing in mind how much we've got of McGann on screen. Even his modern episode is tiny. And I think everybody agrees that if they could do things like doing a special Doctor Who series that incorporates the Joe Martin Doctor, or a special Doctor Who series that incorporates the Eighth Doctor, we'd all be up for that.
Would too, definitely.
Yeah, but they're never going to do that. But they do spin-offs, so why can't they? But yeah, and, on the whole, if it weren't for the issues of the cheesy American inserts, I'd like it a lot. But it's a bit silly in many ways. It's not, the ideas of it aren't that original for me either. You know, in regards to it made no sense. That everything's going to end at midnight, because obviously the Millennium Bug was a big thing at the time anyway, and this was made 4 years before Millennium, wasn't it? Something like that.
Yeah, at that time we weren't discussing that in computers.
No, it's. It's okay as an episode, but you can see why it wasn't commissioned, to be fair. And the other thing that stands out, you know, I think I've got it on Blu-ray. I didn't watch the Blu-ray. I watched it on BritBox this time. But is McGann's wig looks so blatantly, obviously, wig now for in this higher definition thing as well. Which
Wait a second.
What?
How do you watch it on BritBox? It's not on my BritBox.
Well, you have to. It is on BritBox.
No, it isn't.
No, it isn't.
It is. I watched it on BritBox.
I looked for it, and it was.
They've got BritBoxes are different between countries.
Yeah, it must be.
Yes.
Guess so.
I had it took some finding, to be fair, when I had to do a search for Doctor Who.
Doctor Who. It's not there.
Yeah, because you guys.
It wasn't on BritBox here.
If I'm not mistaken, Adam, you guys have Blake 7 as well, correct?
Yeah, we've got Blake 7. Yeah.
Yeah, they've got Blake 7.
You're right.
Not there.
No. Anyway,
there's differences between the program between the two countries. Yes. So if you happen to go to that country by chance,
I'm afraid to do that though,
and take your computer with you, watch it on your computer while you're in that country.
That didn't even occur to me. I would have done that.
Will you stop it? What we got here? Oh, no, nobody said anything new, so move on. Right, so I'm sort of a bit indifferent. It's watchable. But in some ways, a little bit embarrassing to certain because of certain details that don't flow right in the world of Doctor Who.
Adam, you've got to remember they cut it for pre-watershed for us.
I'd like to see the full version, but I still think certain aspects of it are a bit.
You had the trouble. We had Dunblane like 3 months before, so any guns on TV were really frowned upon, more so than usual. Okay. So yeah, it was severely edited for us to watch, definitely. So I remember watching it originally and just wondering about the flow of it, to be honest.
Matthew Kressel says, read Adam's comments on McCoy. McCoy has said in more recent times that he thinks having him in it was a mistake and it confused audiences and Rob McGann of screen time. And RTD has said it's part of why there wasn't a regeneration in modern Who.
If Matthew is making comments online, why doesn't he just join?
I love the way you're talking about Matthew in the third person.
Maybe he's fine just, with doing what he wants to do.
He's got a headache.
He knows where we are, Kirby. He knows he's welcome. Yeah. And just let him be and be comfortable.
So to cut an even longer story short, it was okay. But it's a shame. So what did you think of it then, Kirsty?
Well, it's an interesting one because it's changed, and I was watching it again this time, and I had headphones on this time, which I've never done before when I've watched it, and really actually enjoyed how it sounded. It sounded gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And there's really kind of some decent music in there. Some of it sounds a bit Star Trek-y, which is weird.
Yes,
yes, it definitely does.
Yeah.
There's just some definite notes like that. And like, hey, that's very kind of, yeah. But, so that was great. And yeah, I still really kind of like it. There is a misstep in some of the, you know, the lore of Doctor Who. And it's a definite ploy for a pilot. And I guess the more times I watch it, the more it jars. It's like, oh, there's a jelly baby. Oh, there's a sonic screwdriver. Oh, a cup of tea. Look, he's having a cup of tea. How British. It's like, have him do something British. But the thing is about the passage of time is it makes it better because now it's just this thing that happened once a long time ago. But at the time, it was a huge deal. The kiss? Yeah. Oh, dear God. That was... And now it's just like,
cute.
A kiss. And it wasn't even a very good kiss either. To be honest, now I'm looking at the kiss going...
Oh, we were
pissed off at that. That's a really flat kiss. I'm sorry. I'm like, it did not look enjoyable for either of them. And it's just like, and we were so just, you know, wrapped up in that at the time. And that's what my attitude with fandom now is. It's like, it's just a show. It's a show I love. But, you know, it was just a little kiss. It was trying to play to a market, and I totally get it. It's enjoyable, I think, mainly because McGann really works and really wanted to do the part, and it shows. And I love that the line I gave at the beginning. It's my favorite thing, just because really one of the reasons why is because just the way he delivers it. We don't have enough auxiliary power to move next door. It's just this kind of. It was a kind of a casual kind of funny line, and I'm like, yeah, I want this guy to be the doctor, and that was the thing. This movie gave us the McGann doctor. Yeah. And it really did. He really impressed me in this, regardless of everything else, and the now obvious filming locations. I was interrupted by Kirby earlier with a very nonsensical piece of pedantry, which covered over my lovely factoid. The where the Millennium clock thing was that they stole the clock from. That's a really well-used science fiction location. It's been in, like, all the CW shows. If you look, the great thing about it is because it's all the white steel beams, they can light it from all sorts of directions, different colors. It has been in numerous episodes of Stargate episodes because of its... it's been... I think it was a Stargate...
The Plaza of Nations.
Right. And it was at one point in Stargate, it was see, he's trying to show off and interject himself into my pedantry. But yeah, it's funny because I don't think it was until this episode in watching it back again that I realized it was that location. I'm like, oh, you know, yeah. For those of you, I think it's it was the Stargate it's like the Stargate airport in one of the episode set in the future of Stargate. Can't remember the name of it, but yeah. So
you were asking me some Stargate questions, and guess what? I've never seen not a smidgen of Stargate.
I think we need to get Tom on here if we're going to start talking about Stargate.
No.
His
not,
expertise.
Not no to Tom being on here, but certainly not about talking about Stargate.
No, it's... that's what I meant. Yeah,
but yeah, it was just neat to see those locations. It's like, because back when I originally watched it, I had no idea that wasn't San Francisco. I had no idea what's that. I was like, if they put a Golden Gate Bridge in there, yep, okay. I didn't know anything about TV to know that they're like, oh no, we totally didn't film it there.
I don't give a toss about your stupid bloody podcast.
So, Kirsty. You missed one really pedantic thing.
What?
Missed or allowed you to take it and you didn't.
Well, who did the visual effects?
Go on, tell the people at home.
Go on.
Go on. Come on.
Wally Cleaver from Leave It to Beaver. Yes. Tony Dow.
Never seen that show.
What's that?
It's an American folklore show. Or something.
It was a sitcom from the late 50s, early 60s.
Yeah,
it's up a couple. But
Kirby's trying his hardest to bore us. Time to make a cup of tea. You know he's going to ignore us. Maybe you will go for a wee.
It's just one of those things that was. It's kind of. I'll shut up.
it was a family show about a family, you know, and mom and dad always had the right answers to everything, you know. And the kids
that's
gotta
be worth a ding for Kirby. That was brilliant. You know, that reminded me of when you said, "Oh, shut up." There's an episode of Blackadder where the Queenie sort of like said, "Look, Bessie, it's up to you. Either you can shut up,
or you can have your
head chopped off." And he thinks about half an hour and goes, "I'll shut up."
All right, have your head cut off.
Where do we go? We've got Rob Vance Jr. said 9 million in Britain, 2 million in USA of viewers. Of course, in the US, it was going up against Roseanne. replying to Robert, Matthew Kressel says, and apparently a Chicago Bull basketball game as well. So, yeah, that would have been the best Chicago Bulls side as well at that time. Terry Miles says, kettle's on again. Have you finished, Kirsty? For goodness sake, I've got to try and move this show on.
Kettle's never off.
Right then, right.
My cat's always on if anybody wants a brute.
I think that should be the new tagline for this podcast. It's when you make about Doctor Who Facebook group, and the kettle's always on.
No, it isn't though, is it? Anyway, right now, bye Kirsty. Not, don't leave the show. But I'm going to move on now because this has been going on for far too blimmin' well long.
I think after that.
And the ironic thing is, Kirby, what do you think?
Nothing to say. Let's move on.
It's watchable. It's very definitely watchable. I can't stand the half-human stuff.
Nope.
It's got so many great precursors to the modern era that I really enjoy seeing that, and the music. There's music cues that were brought into modern Doctor Who, like the Master's theme is. You hear bits of that with when the Master regenerates at the end of Utopia.
Right.
It's I'll watch it. I won't go out of my way to watch it.
Nor would I.
One interesting thing this time, for you know how I've got my calendars that I write down everything like when I watch stuff.
Do you?
So.
I'm just all the time.
So I went back to my 1996 calendar and looked at the day that it was broadcast, and there is nothing.
Oh, it's okay.
part of that is because by that point I'd pretty much ignored Doctor Who. However, I do remember we moved from Chicago to Atlanta that next year, and as I was unpacking stuff in 97, I ran across a videotape of the movie. So I apparently did videotape it the night that it came out, but I did not watch it until the next year. I remember watching it going, oh, that's interesting, and pretty much forgot about it until 2004 when rumors of Doctor Who coming back were starting to happen.
Oh, was that it?
It's okay.
Okay. Well, thank you, Kirby. Debbie, what did you think?
I tell you what, if it wasn't for the music, I don't think I'd got through this one again. I don't enjoy this particularly, but I treasure it for the nods back that Russell T. Davis does with Eccleston's era. Especially, and then moving on into Tennant, you do hear, especially as Kirsty and Kirby both said about the music, the cues are there. I respond so well to decent music in TV shows, but when I find I found especially some of the classic episodes we went through, sometimes the music was too music heavy, and it just detracts from what's going on. I have there's a balance for me where music is helpful or hindrance, and this was absolutely perfect for that. And I love Paul McGann. I've always loved him as an actor. I think he's just brilliant. I mean, I first encountered him with Nell and I, which is so different from the Doctor as could be, but just absolutely brilliant acting. I mean, I just felt, McCoy on here, I could see why it would confuse people, but it also felt like, especially with the Master taking over Bruce, it felt like we were trying to make the Gallifreyans Daleks. It felt, we've got to make them have the glowing eyes, and it was like he had to become this very obvious baddie rather than the more subtler baddie. Say Delgado era with he uses his words and his voices. That's great, but you don't have to have him looking like a monster to be a monster. And that's part of the Master's charm, I suppose, as his character. So I found that it was very, very much hearkened to the Dalek goop and things like that. And I can remember watching this the first time and with my sisters and my dad, and just not being totally sure about the direction that Doctor Who would be going in from it. And that's what I took away from this, having now obviously hindsight, and I watched it again before they started broadcasting Rose, before Rose came out. I watched this again, and I find that what they were trying to do felt like it was just trying to be almost handhold an American audience that weren't totally familiar with Doctor Who by utilizing effects and things from Star Trek and, you know, with more obvious enemies and things like that. I just felt it was like it was trying to do too much as an intro episode, where really they should have just banged on with just telling a good story without having to sort of hold your hand so much through it, because it, to me, it feels quite a simplistic story. I mean, I will watch it again. I want to show Isla it, because she didn't watch it with me.
Do you know what I think, Debbie? Sorry to interrupt, but what they should have actually earmarked it as a two-part story, maybe 2 hour-and-a-half parts, and then they could have had
the regeneration,
the swan song for McCoy, as they did, but then a longer, you know, this concentrated on the story a bit more for the rest of the two-parter. That's probably what they would have done.
The story of McCoy on Skaro would have been a good story.
It would have been terrific. I'd love to see that. It's like with Sophie Aldred's book, where they harken back to an adventure which causes causes Ace's character obviously to leave the Doctor. That's terrific. We want that kind of backstory, and it didn't give us enough.
No,
as you know, ongoing fans didn't get enough, and the new fans coming to it, you know, curious fans, just got confused. And I just feel it 3 out of 5 for me, if that, to be honest.
Okay. Thank you, Debbie. Matthew, what did you think?
Oh, well, I'm going to preface this by saying, first off, it's been about a year since I saw the TV movie. Oh, my quote, Kirby, since you guilted me onto being on the show. For the record, I hadn't watched this in about a year, and B, I wasn't feeling really good yesterday, still not feeling great today, so I hadn't expected to be awake to be on.
Isn't Kirby mean, Matthew?
Mean and pedantic. Mean and pedantic. I'm not sure which is worse.
I know someone who's more pedantic than I am.
That doesn't surprise me, Kirby.
You.
Anyways, quote off the top of my head. Who am I?
Yes. Yes.
Did anybody use that one?
Not this time, no.
No. I
did last time.
Anyway, I'm going to preface this by saying it's been a full year since I've last watched the TV movie. I did it last time. I'm watching it in the lobby at Chicago TARDIS to talk about it on a panel there. So my memories of it aren't 100% clear. But I think, you know, I've recently been rewatching 2 other sci-fi shows that were on Fox at the time, namely The X-Files and Sliders, both of which were made in Vancouver. And while the writer and director of this certainly hadn't worked on those shows, and as far as I know, never did, visually it does owe a lot to those 2 shows. You could watch them all 3 side by side, and they do look a lot alike. So I can understand now for the first time the criticism of, oh, it's too Americanized, where that came from. On having said all that, I mean, for all of its faults, in some ways it's remarkable it got made at all. There's a wonderful documentary on the DVD release called The 7-Year Hitch, which in turn is based on a book called Regenerations, written by Philip Siegel, who was the executive producer of this alongside Gary Russell. And I know that I'm just hearing about Debbie and Adam, you two were talking about, ideally this would have been a miniseries in some ways. You'd have done the 2 90-minute parts. I think that's talking about if in an ideal world you were going to make it. And what's clear from Philip Siegel's account, both in the documentary and the book, was this was not the ideal world to be making Doctor Who in, because it ended up taking a 7 years to actually get a project off the ground. But when it came together in a bit of a rush. And also as a funky co-production between Fox Television, Universal Television here in the US, and also both BBC Television and BBC Worldwide. And as Siegel has said, he was basically having to answer to 4 different masters, as it were, and 4 different sets of notes, and nobody's notes agreed with each other, especially the BBC's, because that's just how that works. So in some ways, it's remarkable that it got made at all, and I think certainly had the reputation for a long time of being the failed pilot that killed Doctor Who off forever. Which I think is unfair, because on the one hand, yes, that was kind of sort of the intention, but it also wasn't the intention. Certainly, as Philip Siegel has said, when Fox commissioned it, Fox made it very clear this wasn't going to be an ongoing series, at least through them. You know, if it did incredibly well, they would consider commissioning it and running with it. But it was going to have to do really well. And of course, as Robert Wentz Jr. and I were talking about on the comment thread before I jumped on here, it didn't do incredibly well here. I think it actually did, 4.5 million viewers rather than two. But it was also, it was down to three things, two of which we mentioned in the comment thread, but also the way Fox chose to promote it was it was sci-fi TV movie of the week, rather than here's this iconic British series you may have saw on PBS a decade ago, and we're bringing it back, and it's going to have a bigger budget than ever, and it's actually going to look pretty cool. That wasn't how they promoted it, and if they had promoted it that way, it might have gotten a few more viewers. I honestly don't know. Based on my memories of having seen it a year ago, I do tend to think it holds up pretty well. It is the bridge between classic Who and modern Who in so many respects.
Yes.
You're dealing, in some ways, it's clearing the continuity off from classic Who.
Continuity?
If only shocking. Well, you think about the way modern Who started, particularly you look at Rose, Into the World, those first two or three episodes. You know, Russell T. Davies going out of his way to gently bring an audience into things, and also not bringing all the big stuff from the past back. And that's not what happened with the TV movie. Those opening, 3 minutes or something, you've got, Daleks, Scarrow, the Master, the TARDIS is bigger on the inside, two different incarnations of the Doctor, regenerations and everything else. Mark Gatiss has a wonderful quote in a radio documentary called Project Who, about them bringing the show back in 2005, where he said, I could just imagine somebody flipping through, channels in Wichita or somewhere, watching those opening couple of minutes and going, what the blank is this, right before flipping the channel? And I suspect, though I don't know, that could well have been the case. I think time has been a lot kinder to it, in that we can look back on it now as a one-off, and we can see a lot of the stuff that carried over from there, and also the stuff that was really good in it, particularly McGann and that TARDIS set. Funnily enough, I know that you guys were talking about the music sounding a lot like Star Trek. That's one of the few 90s sci-fi properties that John Debney, who did the music, actually did not work on. He never did music for Star Trek. But he did do the music for Sequest. Which was the show that Siegel was working on at the time that he got the BBC's attention to do what became the TV movie. So in a weird way, it's kind of the culmination of this lengthy project, and also the meshing of this kind of the series that had really kind of run its course in the UK, but also the kind of the 90s sort of sci-fi TV sort of tropes and whatnot that I think a lot of the networks here were going with, which I think is why, as I said, looking back on X-Files and Sliders now, the TV movie owes a lot to them visually, for better or worse. It's not the greatest piece of Doctor Who ever made. It's not the worst piece of Doctor Who ever made. And I think the great shame in some ways is that there could have been a really good show to come out of it, I think.
Yes, but well, what did come out of it was a whole lot of McGann Big Finish, and McGann was the Big Finish Doctor. So that for me is that obviously without Big Finish you wouldn't really have Modern Who anyway. So that for me started the bridge.
Without Modern Who or the books for that matter. Bridge was going in. Yeah, the books are a huge influence on Modern Who as well, particularly the works of a writer named Lawrence Miles. I mean, Alien Bodies is in so many ways, as an Eighth Doctor novel, it is the blueprint for Modern Who in so many ways. But it's an important milestone moment, I think, in the show's history, because it's the bridge between classic and modern.
Yeah.
It jump-started a lot of the spinoff fiction that had a big influence on the show. Do I wish that there had been a McGann Doctor Who TV series?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
But I don't know if it would have been successful enough to have kept running, but also if you know, the show would be have come back and has been be as big and popular as it became if there had been this failed show in the 90s.
You're probably right. Robert Vance Jr. says, hope you're feeling better, Matthew Kressel. And then, I like Sequest. Roy was great, but we're not going to go down the Sequest conversation route. We can do that privately. Right then.
A few minutes ago, what did I say about knowing someone who is more pedantic than I am? It was just proven.
Whatever. Anyway,
did anybody mention that it wasn't supposed to be Sylvester McCoy that McCann was supposed to regenerate from?
Nearly got there, Mary.
No.
It wasn't supposed to be then.
Did nobody watch the... Kirby, I'm shocked you didn't watch the documentary?
No.
Years ago.
So in the book and in the documentary, Siegel tells the story, and in the documentary, I think, is it Joe Wilcox, I think who was the executive producer on the BBC side, and Alan Yentov, who I think was running BBC Drama or BBC One at the time, tell the story that when they got the script, it just said former doctor or past doctor or something. And the BBC sent Siegel casting notes on who they thought it should be, because apparently the BBC didn't think it should be Sylvester McCoy. They thought it should have been Tom Baker, because Tom Baker was the better known of doctors in the U.S. And also they didn't want to remind people that McCoy had been the doctor when the show had just ended a few years before. So if you can imagine all of the continuity arguments about whether the TV movie was canon or not, could you imagine if it had opened with an alternative Tom Baker regeneration?
Might I just take a moment to say that Kirby just tried to point out that there was somebody who was more of a pedant on the show.
And he succeeded.
And Matthew went on to prove that point.
Well done. Very, very good, though. Very good.
Don't get me wrong. That was cool. But I just wanted to point out that the irony.
And I do want to say that when Matthew, when he carries on, we learn a lot.
We learn a hell of a lot. Yeah.
He interferes and puts his things in. It's usually stuff we've already heard.
But not on this occasion.
But we do love it anyway, though, Kirby.
Yes.
Yes. Don't get upset, Kirby.
I didn't walk into that door so much as I just ran into it headlong.
Yeah, it was just I was trying not to laugh the entire time and trying to listen too. I was just like,
yeah, but the thing is, though, when Kirby comes up with a good point, that he deserves one of these belly things. We're not going to do it now because that's not appropriate. So it's a moments to cherish with Kirby. But now it's a moment to cherish because.
Thank you.
Mary, at long last.
I hated it. I picked my quote, stop it, because that's how I felt all through the movie. It embodies everything that I hate about American television. You know, the gangs with machine guns, which, you know, like give a very wrong impression overseas. And all the leads are beautiful. You know, the music is, you know, interfering all the time. You know, the sets are lush. And we have to have car chases and, you know, motorcycle things. And the only good thing out of this, I would say, is Paul McGann.
Indeed.
Being the doctor. Because he went on to, I think, for many of us, embody the doctor just as much, if not more, than some of his predecessors.
Here.
But, I mean, he stepped right into that, and he was all those qualities that we love about the doctor right from the beginning. But, I mean, these over-the-top scenes, you know, this I dress for the occasion kind of stuff, him wrapped in the shroud from the morgue when he's in that rubbishy part of the hospital and he's spreading his arms out like he's, you know, the Christ figure. You know, that just made me crazy. And having that, clockwork orange contraption put over his face.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so much that was just over the top. And then the shoehorning in of all the stuff that not only did probably American who Who fans probably didn't really even know about or care about. You know, it just made it very confusing. But I think McGann, who was the one who did most of that, pulled it off as best as he could. I was admiring how he was managed to getting all that in there without just sounding, you know, like a pedant, you know, giving you the entire history of Doctor Who in 20 seconds, you know. So if I had not known anything about Doctor Who and I had tuned into this, I would have been out of there probably within a minute or two. It's going, oh, my gosh, what is this? So, no, I don't like anything about it except Paul McGann's performance. I think when Eric Roberts is acting more just normal, I think he does well. But when he starts his camping over the top stuff, you know, ugh, that turns me off. Anyway, so that's my thing. I hope we never have to revisit this ever.
I can guarantee we won't. Mary, but thank you, Mary.
Yes.
Mary, I have to ask, having been on the show fairly regularly these past few weeks and listening to your reviews, do you actually like Doctor Who?
Actually, I love Doctor Who. I love the idea of Doctor Who. I love that... The idea of someone who can outwit monsters and universe destruction and all that without becoming a shoot 'em up kind of person. I love that. I love the whole idea. I like that he's positive about humans. He's always saying compliment. I mean, he insults them, but then he also compliments them. So the idea of Doctor Who, and when we get into the New Who era, you know, you'll probably hear a lot of different things from me.
Yes, it's got some good stuff coming up soon. So
essentially, Matthew, it's Mary would love Doctor Who if they would just make it right.
So well said. So well said.
Robert Vance Jr. says, "Lol, two geeks going at it." That's about 15 geeks on this show. And then he says, "Go, Mary Blitz Lang, go."
I mean, give me the 11th hour any day.
Well, you'll get that at some point, inevitably.
That's perfect. That's
finally get to the end of this part of the show. So we now move on to feedback, which is Kirby's section. I presume you've actually put in a request for feedback this week.
Yes, okay. I posted a picture of the Master in that over the top outfit.
Right, so that essentially could have been summed up with the word yes. I know it's probably impossible,
and Kirsty was the first respondent saying, "I'm laying out an outfit specifically for this event." So, what is that outfit? You haven't shown us.
I won't. It's just my underwear.
Oh, no.
I dress for these podcasts.
Robert Wins Jr. says,
"We used to have to when we were videoing."
Yeah.
So you are past that era.
Robert Wins Jr. says, "So you are the new model, teeth and curls, part of lines from the Five Doctors." Yes, we know. Matthew Kressel, as I won't be on the show this week for health reasons, I'll point listeners/group members to my thoughts on the TV movie from the 2015 over on Warp Factor. And no, Kirby, I don't expect you or anyone else to try reading this on air.
But did he expect to be berated by one of the hosts into actually coming on the audio and reading the damn stuff out anyway?
The answer to that question is most certainly no.
Really? Are you really? Oh, come on.
Oh, really?
No, really, Kirby. That's not what you said earlier.
Well, I've tried that before.
Well, if he's texting... He can
just come on. Anyway, carrying on.
May I carry on?
Please do.
Robert Wins Jr., my review of Doctor Who the movie. It was a co-production between BBC Worldwide and Universal Studios, 20th Century Fox, aired the 12th of May, 1996. The Doctor, Sylvester McCoy, taking the body of the Master back to Gallifrey after the Daleks execute him. But all hell breaks loose, and the Master's remains messes up the TARDIS, and they land in 30th December 1999 in San Francisco. The Seventh Doctor is shot like a punk, and thanks to a botched surgery by Dr. Grace, Daphne Ashbrook, He regenerates into the Eighth Doctor. I think Ace should have been in this as a bridge from the old series. I think the interaction between her and Grace providing proof that he is the Doctor. I should have asked her when she was on the podcast if she was asked to be in the movie.
She was not.
The Doctor does like he did in Spearhead from Space and takes other people's clothing. And not just there, but 11th hour. Chang Li helps the Doctor at first, but is taken over by the Reform Master. The Master tried to get the remaining Doctor's lives, but falls into the Eye of Harmony. Grace and Chang Li were killed by the Master, but were brought back to life by going back a day in time, restoring their lives. Grace stays behind, and the Doctor takes off to Big Finish to do audio after this. Above average story, but did cause talk about a few things. The Doctor's rising like Jesus, the kiss from his companion, and the half-human remark. At the time, I really didn't mind any of it. Paul McGann as the Doctor was great, but Eric Roberts as the Master was over the top. I think worse than Anthony's Master. It's too bad we don't see him again until Night of the Doctor, when he regenerates into the War Doctor. I won't be doing a review of Curse of Fatal Death. Let's just say it was better than Dimensions in Time, but that's not saying much. My rating for the movie is 3.5 out of 5. My next review will be Scream with the vampire-looking Doctor.
What? Yes, that's the Schalke.
Oh, okay.
Neil James.
He does kind of look like a vampire in that, doesn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, he does. Neil James, Doctor Who the movie. I always find it weird that it's McGann that does the opening voiceover instead of McCoy.
Yep.
I'm so glad that the Seventh Doctor came back for this to bridge the gap since the classic era ended. The TARDIS interior is great, but I think the cloister room is a bit too massive. And that begins my moaning, so here it goes. I really don't like the San Francisco setting, and Chang Li really annoys me. Give me Adric any day over this a-hole.
Wow.
Wow.
Ooh, a little rough.
Ooh, what if the actor happens to come on and hear this? As much as I love seeing McCoy again, it wasn't the best idea to have over 20 minutes play out before introducing McGann on screen. And then they gave him a daft outfit and a horrible wig. I would have much preferred his clothing to be a mix of things from various lockers rather than someone's whole fancy dress costume. Also, not wanting to be rude, but the costume the Doctor steals was supposed to be worn, but quite a, what?
By quite a large character.
By quite a large character, but so surely it should have been a huge one again.
Yeah, I wondered about that too.
Yeah. I don't like the Master very much, despite his best Terminator impression. Eric Roberts is a good actor, but this just doesn't work for me. The story fails to grip me, and the finale is generic and predictable. This is the Eighth Doctor's debut, so I'm baffled that it's Grace that saves the world while he's tied up. Disappointing. And then she doesn't even go with him at the end. It's all very 90s, and they even put the Doctor on a motorbike for the second story in a row. Well, it worked in survival, kind of.
True.
However, there are moments of greatness here. Daphne Ashbrook is brilliant, and the kisses don't bother me at all. There are some wonderful directorial touches, including Grace running through the hospital in her stunning evening dress, the newly regenerated McCann sitting up into the light, and the motorbike cop riding straight into the TARDIS. Two of those, which we just discussed and we didn't like.
Yeah.
But it's the best thing about this has to be Paul McGann. I think he's
excellent.
Everybody
says that.
I accept him as the Doctor immediately, and that scene when he describes Gallifrey and gets excited about his new shoes is one of my favorite moments in all of Doctor Who. Overall, it doesn't really work, but there's enough there to keep it watchable. 3 stars out of 5. Alan T. Butcher, The Curse of Fatal Death is up next week, isn't it? Robert Wins Jr. says yes.
Yes.
Ian Kirk has a script, and that's all I have here.
Thank you, Kirby, isn't it?
Oh, and I did want to point out, since I pointed out on the Facebook group, which you can join, that 10 years ago yesterday, I won a packet of Bassett's Jelly Babies from this podcast.
Curses.
I could have been resting comfortably right now.
Go back to sleep.
No! I'm just being rude.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast, this is Ian Kirk.
Hello, Ian.
One of those triangular 12-foot pillars appeared on Compton Beach in the Isle of Wight.
It did.
Yeah.
Did you see it on a Banksy or a TARDIS? I think this means the master is straight out of Compton. Doctor Who, the movie by Matthew Jacobs. Filmed in Canada for a US TV network. It looks like they don't have any quarries in Vancouver. Intended to introduce the Doctor to a mainstream US TV audience, the concept of regeneration had to be explained. Possibly to avoid causing uproar in the Bible Belt, as John Lennon had done, an on-screen comparison with Frankenstein is used. Also, this might be an in-joke about resurrecting the show using various elements stitched together.
Good.
Both the Doctor and the Master come back from the dead. The development process took years, during which Terry Nation died in 1997. He had worked tirelessly to get his Daleks to America. They are mentioned, but remain off-screen.
Yeah.
How amazing it would have been to have a Dalek courtroom scene.
Yeah.
Objection! Overruled! Overruled! As it is, the idea of the Daleks putting someone on trial for being too evil is baffling.
Yes.
The TARDIS Wikia has a long section on the many changes in the concept before the final script.
Yes.
Sylvester McCoy had to manage without Colin Baker for his first story, and always intended to be there for his own regeneration. The Doctor's first on-screen romance is with a surgeon. Daphne Ashbrook and Paul McGann are wonderful in this. Shame about the other guy. Oh well, at least he never had anything else to do with Doctor Who. Bye for now.
Bye, Ian, and thank you very much. Anybody got anything to say briefly?
I just added a link to the TARDIS Wikia.
Actually, just a couple of things I wanted to pick up on. Him mentioning Terry Nation actually was alive when this was made.
Yeah. Yes.
The reason that the Daleks aren't in it, nor any other Doctor Who monster, is because, and this is something that Siegel and Gary Russell go into in Regeneration, when they finally got the BBC to agree and they looked at what the BBC actually owned of Doctor Who, they were shocked to discover that the BBC owned next to nothing because of the way the UK Writers Guild worked. All of the monsters' copyrights, of course, belong to the writers. So Terry Nation owned the Daleks, Cybermen belonged to Jerry Davis and Kit Bedler, etc. And there wasn't money in the budget to go license them from somebody else. And I think Philip Siegel's most infamous line was, well, we could probably have only have afforded to have built three costumes like they did in, you know, in the British show. And when you can't do a convincing alien invasion of the world story on with only three monsters. Which led to a gag in the first of the Eighth Doctor novels, Lance Barkin's The Dying Days, which has the Ice Warriors invading and occupying England. And that, as a running gag in that book, Parkin deliberately only has three Ice Warriors in a scene at any one time, just to prove the point.
Thank you. Right, Debbie, you have some blurb.
I do indeed. Doctor Who, da TV movie. Not quite a real Doctor Who, half human on mummy's side, yeah, sure, very Spock. It would be... What?
You said yeah.
No, I thought somebody said
hey. Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been better if the American networks had not wanted a made-for-TV movie and just put up the monies, then let the Brits write the story. That would never happen. The story. The Daleks executed the Master. They then let the one person they hate in all the universe and are supposed to kill on sight come and pick up the body. No way. The dead Master turning into a snake of gloop and taking over a first responder's body. Oh, well, it is a science fiction fantasy story.
Is it?
I forgot the TV in that. Well, the story was okay. Good to see the regeneration of McCoy to McGann. Paul McGann was very good, and it was a precursor to the way he would play the part in the Big Finish stories, and of course the short prequel to The War Doctor.
Yep.
But the Doctor and Grace riding on the motorbike reminded us of Kim Cattrall in Mannequin. Sorry, I stumbled over that name. Shame Grace couldn't stay on as a companion. It might have become a series. Thinking about that, forget it. Knowing the way the networks work, they would have cancelled it and kept the rights. RTD would never have been able to restart the show. Linda enjoyed it because, like Mary, she loves Paul McGann. Me, I would have liked it a bit more without the non-canon human mother bit. Stay safe, everybody. Linda and Terry Miles.
Thank you, Debbie. Mary. Well,
Adam?
Yes?
I said you're welcome, Adam.
Thank you. Mary, you have some blurb.
Oh, Mary.
And how Alan titles this shows that he understands the evolution of the scripts that led to this. So those who know the history will appreciate this title. It's called I Left My Heart in San Francisco, or A Lucky Escape from Barossa's Son, Ulysses. Yeah, that was an earlier version of the story. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Ooh, narrow escape.
Dear 20 megabiters, Doctor Who, the movie, is of course a closely studied synthesis of the overall plots of the films Superman the Movie and Superman II. We see a benign alien come to Earth and try to work out what he's doing, and he is then followed by an escapee alien of his own people who provides the threat and dominates others. Casualties are reversed in the end by a weirdly and inadequately justified reversing of time, which makes no sense at all. It should be noted that while some suggest that the failure to secure a series after this episode was a good thing because the eventual revival was so successful, in fact, we missed out on a really good and likable actor taking the show forward at a much earlier stage.
Yes.
Yeah.
We also learned that the Daleks, despite their contempt and hatred for all other life forms, have a surprisingly respectful attitude towards the death of their enemies, to the point where, albeit having executed one, they will allow their archenemy to collect the remains for repatriation, and that, apparently, is a perfectly reasonable plot point.
People like to say that a lot.
Oh, sorry. I didn't ask that to play, but it just did. But you know what's coming next. Carry on.
All in all, Doctor Who, the movie, leaves a lot to be desired, but delivers its principal objective to establish a great new actor in the eponymous role. The fact that the producers never really managed to have the confidence to give it a proper title is telling. The half-hearted attempt and a title, The Enemy Within, is loose at best and served better to call back to 1989's Margaret Thatcher bashing period of the show, having been a phrase she disgracefully used against collective action by working people. It is hard not to feel that a lot of bad choices were made, and to some extent this made the fact they got it finished was very remarkable. Script development appears to have been cackhand, leading from what may well have been a disastrously weird story to a rather safer but simplistic tale with a clunky end. Production values are decent, but it is only the actors that hold it together. Only Eric Roberts gives a somewhat questionable performance, and even he basically works, given the strange place that the Master is in. McCoy was good to the extent he had much to do, but as he has said, it would have been a better plan to flash back to his demise in an episode of a following series.
Yes.
Chang Li and Grace Holloway provide relatively quirky and different character support, and Paul McGann very credibly works through regenerative trauma to come together as a character progressively throughout the story. The other great achievement of this was to prove the public interest in the show was very much still alive. This story is several series, seasons, or years too short because McGann deserved his chance.
Yes, he did.
Happily, this has been further proved by Big Finish.
Yes.
Hear, hear.
Next up, Doctor Who and the Predetermination Paradoxes, or Who is That Blackadder Fellow? Those are my thoughts, Alan T. Butcher.
Oh, thank you, Mary. Thank you, Alan. I was chuckling through that, not because of what Alan said, but as I did mention, we'd had Tim Drury's theme tune because I was just queuing it up and it played spontaneously. He said, I saw Adam leaning back in his chair and thought Kirby must have been talking. That made me chuckle. The TV movie, that brief time back in 1996 when we thought Doctor Who would be back for good. Can still remember clearly seeing Paul McGann on the front of DWM whilst on car journey to visit relatives. Loved McGann's Doctor. The film itself is a mixed bag. Not keen on the TARDIS console having a warp drive instead of a time rotor. Yeah, I didn't like the flick over characters that implied they were always on Earth. But that's fine, that's another story. But yes, I still loved the whole thing, the actual console and everything. But there were some certain aspects, yeah, if I had the details, you would think, that doesn't fit. But yes, thank you, Tim.
I thought that the time rotor was very similar to the ones we got in the news.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah.
But it was called a warp drive, wasn't it? Or was it? Is he just saying it looks like a warp drive?
Yeah, and it looked like there were only four places he could go because there were labeled things on the TARDIS console that had
It was very much based on the wooden console from the Fourth Doctor's era. But a little bit more rudimentary. Robert Vence Jr. says, Kirby, I wasn't competing with you about the jelly babies. Just was letting you know when I got mine.
I know. I was making a joke, sir.
Well, did you get jelly babies from the podcast at some point then, Kirby?
Yes.
Ten years ago, yesterday.
Was it?
He posted a picture of jelly babies with, I forget the date, and apparently he still has them in there from the late 80s. What?
Well, I still had a packet of Opal Fruits when they changed Opal Fruits to Starburst. I kept it as a memento until they went a bit funny.
I didn't keep the actual sweets, but I kept the last packet labeled.
I kept the sweets.
Yeah, he posted a picture of a packet. Had mine since 1989, and then I responded, "Oh, I didn't realize we were competing for the oldest empty packet of jelly babies." And then I posted a picture of my first packet, which I kept. I purchased it sometime before the expiration date, which is printed on it, January 1985.
Oh, dear.
Right. Okay, well, move on. Anyway, I just wanted to say I'm glad you posted your picture of your cards from the Staggering Stories team, because I got one as well, but I forgot to mention it. So thank you, the Staggering Story team, for lovely Crimbo card.
I didn't. I'm too new.
Who's new?
I found a nice story about this movie. At the time this came out, I was actually dating somebody via this wonderful thing called the internet.
Oh, yes.
I was on a thing called IRC. For those young people out there, called
I know what it is.
Internet relay.
No, that's not surprising. Is it, Kirby? Not surprising at all.
I didn't know what that was.
and this young woman that I was speaking to had to listen to me rabbit on about Doctor Who an awful lot, and then I found out that they were making a movie and it was going to be on American TV, and she videotaped it for me and sent it to me. And I was so appreciative I married her and had two children with her.
So that's romantic.
I used to have to use IRC to get bootleg recordings of Disney rides.
Okay.
Wow.
Hey, back in the day, that's the only way you could do it.
I feel like Kirby just got the most pedantic trophy back.
Yeah.
Debbie?
Yes.
You just send an email to show@staggeringstories.net with your address, and they'll send you a Christmas card.
I'm not.
Debbie, if you beg them, they'll send you one.
I'm not going to beg someone. No, that's how I
recycled or something.
I keep forgetting every year until someone I see someone else has asked for one.
I'm terrible when it comes to cars. Anyway, can we move on? What about to say? What, when
can
was...
I circle us back to the TV movie a bit and mention, because talking about Kirstie getting bootleg copy, having to get the TV movie bootlegged. I had to do that in 2009 the first time I watched it, because, again, funky production deal the way it was made. Universal got the U.S. distribution rights, and I think distribution rights were a large part of the world. And then because it didn't go to a show, they never released it, and they had no interest in doing it. So I actually had to get an Australian friend of mine to bootleg me a DVD copy of the TV movie, because I had dial-up internet at the time. So I couldn't watch it online like a normal person.
Well, all my bootlegged, a lot of my bootlegged Doctor Who from the 1980s had Australian adverts on them.
Check Lies and Videotape, is a wonderful documentary on, I think it's the Revenge of the Cybermen DVD.
Yes, it's great. It's really, really good.
About people having to do all this.
All right, can I move on to the next bit?
No.
Actually, before I move on to the next bit, when did, what date did the Doctor Who movie go out in Britain? Anybody know?
I want to say the 14th or the 16th of May.
It was May 1996.
I was just trying to work out if Deb was pregnant at the time, but she wasn't. Right then. Now,
it wasn't long after John Pertwee died, because the BBC version of it had the tribute to John Pertwee, the card at the front of it.
27th of May 1996.
So I think I'm pretty sure that we had a short discussion about it with John Pertwee and the lead up to it when we met him in Medina Theatre. Anyway, moving on. A couple of weeks ago, Kirby forgot to remind me that I'd put on this post that said, list your top three classic Doctor Who stories
last week,
below,
that's not a couple of
avoiding
weeks.
The same incarnation. That's the key bit, the avoiding the same incarnation.
That was hard work, that one.
So, first of all, I didn't put mine on there.
Are you saying that Kirby did not remind you?
No, he didn't remind me. I didn't ask him to. I didn't ask him to, but generally he would do it anyway.
Actually, Master?
Yeah?
May I defend myself?
No.
No.
First of all, it was last week. And secondly, I was going to remind you, except you brought in Ben.
Oh, of course, it was Ben's fault. Okay, that's fine.
Yes, it was Ben's fault.
Always Ben's fault, honestly.
Right then, so my choice is...
That reminds me, we didn't have Debbie for a couple of stories.
That's what she said. But anyway, moving on.
You didn't have me for the last story, no.
Yeah, she couldn't bear to come on for Dimensions in Time. That's basically it. That is her review. I couldn't be bothered to do it.
I couldn't actually talk properly, but I didn't have COVID.
Did you like Dimensions in Time quickly then, Debbie?
No.
Well, there we go. Right, brilliant. Okay, moving on. Right. So this is my choice of top three classic Doctor Who stories. Number three, War Games. Number two, Planet of Spiders. And number one, City of Death.
And that's it. Are we going to go through all 57 comments?
Can I... Hang on, where are we? I'm going to...
Why don't we talk about ours, then?
Yeah, we could... Well, have you done them, then?
Well, I put mine on his list, so yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm going to go through the list here. Matthew Cressel says, Inferno, number three, Genesis of the Daleks, number two, and Curse of Fenric, number one. Billy Kirkbright says, Eh, by gum, missus. The Planet of Spiders, number three. Ark of Infinity, great stuff, number two. And Seeds of Doom, number one. All the pictures of when we met him down on Sandown, him and his lovely wife.
You get right off.
That was
now.
Great fun, Stop wasn't it? don't know what Neil James did, posted a picture of Tegan's cousin. Or was it Tegan's cousin's friend? I don't know. Paul Clement says, Web of Fear, Visitation, Talons of Wind, Tai Chiang. Neil commented with, It makes me happy seeing the Visitation get some love. Martin Nygren says, Curse of Fenric, number three, Carnival of Monsters, number two, and Robots of Death, number one. Now, the good thing about this is as you go through, these titles come, you think, I stick with my three, but it's nice to see that there's some cracking stories being mentioned. Alan T. Butcher, for instance, Frontier in Space, Genesis of the Daleks, and The Mind Robber. Chris Sanders, and people that don't normally post as well, like Chris Sanders.
Yeah, there's a lot of those.
Remembrance of the Daleks, Genesis of the Daleks. He likes his Daleks, and Terror of the Mutons. Legend is the daddy of the show, Paul Wilson, was Underworld number 3, which was one of my favourites. Love and Monsters number 2, and Time Lash number 1.
I believe that was a joke.
It was.
No, he said to, I got. He said that is yeah, because he put in a Love and Monsters, which was not a classic one, so I told him off, and I like it. He said, to be honest, I didn't read your post. I just picked up the worst stories I could think of. Git. Spoiling the fun of it. Daddy there, isn't he? That's not very good parenting, Paul. Right then. Alan T. Butcher said, what random point is defining classic? Oh, for God's sake. It's sounding like you, Alan. Kirby, sorry. So he says, so Dimensions in Time and McGann, etc. goes with all that follows up. But now, anyway, moving on right now. And Neil James, number 3, was Curse of Fenric. That comes up a lot. Caves of Androzani, which I nearly had on mine. And Terror of the Zygons, another really good one. Adam J. Purcell, have you heard of him? It's like having a celebrity mentioned on our show. Time Flight, then Horns of Nyman, and it's staggering. And Time Lash. Karen Dunn, another podcasting celebrity, you daft bugger. I think she's talking about Kirby, obviously. Richie Williams, World's End. World's End, isn't that Demon?
Dalek's Invasion of Earth, I think.
Castrovalva and Giant Robot. Oh, I see what he's getting at there. I love the way he says, Alan T. Butcher says, Giant Robot, you must be a Target fan.
yes.
And Richie did the thumbs up. Rob Lansdowne was a case of
Androzani. There's more coming in there.
What?
Okay.
Are we not doing every single comment on
this? No, I'm being a podcast host. I'm being a podcast host and just picking out the highlights, not going through every single sentence, character, and abbreviation that may or may not be in the text. Anyway, Rob Lansdowne says, number 3, case of Androzani. Number 2, Genesis of the Daleks. Number 1, Remembrance of the Daleks. There we go. It's a...
he likes Daleks.
A different one. Karen Dunn, celebrity. Genesis of the Daleks, number 3. Deep Breath. That's not a classic one.
That's not classic, too.
And Awakening, number 1. That was Paul's fault that she did that. That's what we're going to blame Paul. Billy Kirkbright. I'm sure he said it. He's doing another one, the cheating sod. Mark of the Rani, Pyramids of Mars and Tenth Planet.
Thank you. You said it properly this time.
What do you mean?
You were so mean to him.
I wasn't. I was trying to... Oh, you're saying that was mean? You don't like my accent, then?
You
bygone missus. good Lord. I've got Tony Bellows has done quite a detailed description. Okay, well, we'll pander to that. Sea Devils, Pertwee, Delgado, Manning, and a wonderful Navy location, and Pertwee eating twice. Once in the flight with Delgado, once stealing sandwiches from Katie. Remembrance of the Daleks, McCoy and Aldred nailed this one, and it's got the Century 21 Dalek spaceship design and Emperor, and Genesis of the Daleks, Baker, Slade and Marta at the top of their form. So there we go. Christian Ainscough, number 3 was City of Death, though that should be number 1. Tomb of the Cybermen, another one that deserves a good mention, and Ghostlight, number 1.
How do Gene you know Riddler, people are putting these in the other order anyway?
I don't care. Gene Riddler, celebrity.
I wrote my number in front of mine just in case.
Again, it's funny how the Staggering Stories team are getting slightly confused with the rules of this particular thing. Doctor's yes. Wife, Ark of Infinity, and Tomb of the Cybermen. At least it's mostly classic ones in that particular one. Eric Escamala, Caves City Carnival, or Carnival City Caves, depending on which way you want to do that one. Oh my God, Drew Mayer, Doctor Who TV movie was number 3, City of Death number 2, and Carnival of Monsters number 1. So a shout out there to our current show. Kirby Slartlet Blown, oh sorry, Bartlett Sloan, Ghostlight number 3, Caves of Androzanium number 2, and City of Death number 1. Hey Kirby.
Yeah.
You and I agree on something.
Yes, absolutely. We established that years ago.
But I do love Pirate Planet as well, but City of Death is magical.
But you said we couldn't do...
No, that's why I said that. Otherwise, it would be, just be all Fourth Doctor stories. Exactly. So I just wanted to share
them. Speak for yourself, Adam.
Oh, be quiet, you. Right then, Neil James commented, awesome Ghostlight to Kirby's... statement there, and then Kirby went off on one. Oh no, it's Alan T. Butcher. Ah, yes, probably the wittiest Doctor Who, the best action Best of Action, Action Adventures, and Ghostlight. maybe Del Rose. Number three was Planet of Giants. Number two, State of Decay. Number one, Remembrance of the Daleks. All banging stories. Moving on. Michael Hickerson was three, Genesis of the Daleks. Two, Caves of Androzani. One, Curse of Fenric. Curse of Fenric's getting a few shout-outs.
Yeah, it's definitely getting the most love, actually, out of every single story. That's getting the most mentions, definitely.
Well, are you keeping tally of this?
You know, what I might do
I may add a
tab to the spreadsheet.
I knew that was coming.
Oh, you got it there ahead of Kirsty there. It would be funny if you both said it at the same time.
I was about to say, should we have a betting pool? Or...
Michael Hickerson, I think some of you can't read directions. Neil James couldn't do three. He did five. Two of the Cybermen, number five. Four, Carnivals of Monsters. Three, City of Death, Remembrance of the Daleks, and Curse of Fenric. Two, Caves of Androzani, and one, Genesis of the Daleks. It is difficult.
I was going to say, his number five was three different stories rather than looking at it, because he's got a three-way tie between Tomb of the Cybermen, Ark of Infinity, and Ghostlight.
Yeah, so it was nice. It was thought-provoking at last. Then I went on about Kirby again. Eric has come back with... and 11th Hour. Surely that's classic by now. And Robert Haynes says, I'm unable to name a top three as I love too many. One that would definitely be up there is the one I've always loved, Robots of Death. Right then, talking of Robert, there's some blurb from Robert.
Yes.
So I thought it would be fun. Oh, if I can find it for starters. Bear with. Ah, there it is. If I can find it and send it to a certain person who is becoming a bit of an orator. Trouble is, I'm getting the spinning circle of there's too much text to load things.
Oh, no.
Which is a bit of a shame. Yeah, okay, well, it's not doing that. I'll just do it on my phone. Where's my phone gone? Oh, there it is. Right. Just talk about yourself.
We can't help you with any of these questions. You realise that, right?
Yeah.
What questions? Oh, you're talking there's going to be a quiz? And ain't going to be a quiz.
No, like, no, where's my phone?
Where's my phone?
We really can't help with that.
Hang on, I'm sure.
I know you have a camera, but it.
Well, actually, no. The thing is, though, right, Kirby. Kirby.
Need a Ouija board for that one, I think.
Oh, Kirby.
Or the special camera.
You have access to the 20 megabyte. Crew chat, don't you? On that chat is Robert Haynes's feedback. We cannot not read that out. Well, you actually specifically cannot not read it out. So proceed.
What? Oh, there it is. Yeah.
What? I'm supposed to read it?
Yeah.
Why read it? I've got it up.
I bet you
have. I've got it up.
That's what she said.
That's what she said. Do you know? I'd love to find the original. You remember when Ben did that first ever, that's what she said, and he just went on and on about it. I've never been able to find that. I know it's on a podcast somewhere, but I'd love to be able to sound capture that and use it as some sort of, you know, jingly thing. Who wants to do it then? Shall I flip a coin, find out who's going to do it? Either so we could do
we
Debbie Head.
We had a volunteer, because I'm trying to bring it up.
That's what she said. Oh, sorry, let's get it up.
I'm having trouble getting it full screen.
That's what she said.
But I'm happy to do it. I've got it up on my phone.
That's what she said.
I've already read.
Let Matthew do it.
Oh,
right.
Can you see it, Matthew?
Round of that's what she said.
Yeah, I finally got it. Full.
I'm a McGander, but probably not the one you're expecting. And you're listening to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
That's Paul McGann, by the way. Just,
I know.
While you decide who's actually going to be doing this.
Right.
Matthew.
Right.
Go
on and show Kirby how it's done.
I could probably do it with Australian accent.
I'm going to have to bail tonight as I'm not feeling too...
I'm going to have to bail tonight as I'm not feeling too great either. Hopefully Mary uses the I need the doctor's body line as her quote. Mine is, my name is not Honey, which I almost used. I have to say that I absolutely loved watching this again. I watched the Blu-ray,
It had such a nice sense of fun. Well, after the gangland violence, which is a weird fit for Doctor Who, it was nice to see McCoy get a nice send-off, even if they probably spend too long getting to McGann. I don't mind the costume or the wig. He looks the part and brings a great energy to the proceedings. He and Daphne work off each other very well. Chang Li was a bit of a weird character. He seemed mostly there for the Master to spout exposition to. He had no qualms with using a gun, but seemed to come good suddenly at the end. Lots of things don't make sense, least of all the Eye of Harmony being in the TARDIS. Why does the Eye only open for a human in a Time Lord ship?
Yeah.
Spoiler, Big Finish explained that in the Sixth Doctor audio, The Apocalypse Element.
Well, explain it to us. And when you're
so
done.
I'll do that when I'm done. So the Doctor's mother is human? Is he Spock now?
Yes.
Well, that was never spoken of again. A lot like Spock's siblings. Does the Doctor just happen to have a torture device laying around in the TARDIS ready for him? Is he into some strange S&M?
Yes.
And the Master's outfit. What does the Doctor have that in his wardrobe for?
Because
I did like the regeneration taking place in as Universal's Frankenstein is playing on TV. That worked well. As was mentioned on the extra, Eric Roberts plays the Master as the Terminator when he's wearing the shades and leather jacket, but goes all camp when in the ridiculous outfit. I almost expected a song a la Sweet Transvestite. I thought they made good use of the location. I never knew it wasn't San Francisco until later. We did enjoy Vancouver when we visited. One can only wonder what would have come of a series had one taken off from that. Now people say that Grace wouldn't have been a companion as she declined the offer of travel. Then again, so did Rose at first, and look at how that turned out. As I say, though, I really enjoyed watching this again. From Robert Haynes, everyone.
Thank you, Robert. What were you going to say?
Explain.
What were you going to say, Matthew?
Oh, I was. There's a Big Finish audio was made fairly early on after they got the license called The Apocalypse Element, and I tried to explain this without taking too long. The Daleks tried to invade Gallifrey at one point because they're trying to get to the Eye of Harmony to do something involving said Apocalypse Element, and at one point to stop the Daleks from getting to the Eye of Harmony proper. Sixth Doctor uses his companion Evelyn Smythe, who's human, to reset all of the Time Lord locks because they use retinal scans. And if the retinal scans, there's only one human on Gallifrey, so the Daleks can't do what they're trying to do. And there's a line at the end of the story along the lines of, "Well, I think I reset that everywhere, but it could take some time to catch up."
Ah, okay.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
There you go. Sorry. Pardon me. Sorry about that. Audible.
Dear,
I did like the mention of he mentioned, is the Doctor Spock now? How come they've never mentioned that again? And it's a bit like Spock's innumerable siblings now in the various Star Trek movies and TV shows.
Yes.
Spock's second cousin, twice removed.
Yeah.
Matthew Kressel on the feed very cleverly mentioned the Eighth Doctor novel Alien Bodies is available from our sponsor, whoone.co.uk. Well
done, whoone.co.uk?
It is whoone.co.uk.
Yes, Robert Van Schunius, I'm taking off. Have a great rest of the show. I will listen later. Bye for now. Alan T. Butcher said, is there no tab on Kirby's spreadsheet? Now every time someone says, that's what she said.
I'm not going to go back through and do those.
Well, find out when everybody says that's what she said.
That's what she said.
Well, hurry up about it, Kirby.
That's what she said.
Yeah, thank you, Matthew. I was waiting for that one, and
I could add a tab, a column from
you
now forward.
God.
We've got this
you're
one column.
Done, Adam, you're nearly done.
We've got this one column I never use anymore.
You got a column you don't use anymore? That's what she said.
Yes, it says quiz winner.
That's what she said.
Oh dear, that was really good, Cody. Well done.
Oh Lord.
I hope everybody at home is as entertained as we are.
Oh, yeah, we have a great Sunday evening.
There is now a new column that has an X for this week.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my goodness.
Right then. Next time we're going to be looking at Curse of Fatal Death, or whatever it's called. Strange title, to be fair. Yeah. Just for a bit
Curse
of fun.
Curse of Fatal Death. It's
Curse of Fatal Death.
It's still a strange title.
It's not called The Curse of Fatal Death. If
the
that's
Curse
your...
of the Fatal Death, but it's Curse of Fatal Death. But I think it's deliberately written to make people think, Doctor Who fight title supposed to say the something of the something. You know, so
I think it's that,
death.
And I think Stephen Moffat has said he was, because by definition, death is going to be fatal, but
yes,
he was basically making fun of the deadly assassin, because by definition, isn't an assassin supposed to be deadly?
Yes, but I tell you, there's an array of actors in this, and I tell you what, I think Jonathan Pryce plays the master, doesn't he? If I remember rightly,
he does.
Wouldn't he have made a bloody good master? Anyway,
he did.
And because of the, like I said before, because of the brand new introduced timeless child thing, of course, these are now official incarnations of the Doctor.
Correct.
Very quiet.
Perhaps.
perhaps. I'll go with that. Perhaps.
Adam, are we doing next Sunday?
Why, what's wrong with next Sunday?
I'm just asking.
I was planning to, But I mean, not the following Sunday. I think... I'll just check my diary.
I'm just going to drop this here. It's my birthday on the Monday, and so I want to stop anybody coming around and being annoying on the Sunday night. They can come around actually on my birthday instead.
Yeah, I think I was planning to do. You see, this is how it's planned out on my diary anyway. It says yes next Sunday, and then I've got nothing for the following Sunday because I'm going to incorporate that because I'm going to be working anyway. I'm going to incorporate
that. On the 27th, there's no Scream of the Shocker, is what you're saying.
Not on the 27th, no. Well, I think Deb's been moaning for months about having a Sunday off, so I'm feeling tempted to go for that one.
Why not? Then we start the new year with Rose.
Yeah.
Well,
no, we don't. No, it's the Doctor Who
Rose.
New Year episode, which will probably be done
I mean.
On the 3rd. Hopefully, everybody will have watched it by the 3rd.
I'm used to it being a Christmas episode.
I should be able to see it by then.
Yeah,
it should be. Yeah,
Scream of the Blimmin' Shelter on the 10th. And then Rose on the 17th, if I'm allowed to do podcasting. That's a joke, by the way.
You might have to give it up for your New Year's resolution, you mean?
Well, give it up. I don't know. But yes, yeah, so that's immediately next week. And
That'll be fine with me, because I'll be in Chicago on the 27th anyway.
Chicago! Oh, there you go, then. Chicago. Aren't I clever? Okay. Sorry, I just got distracted by the football, because... Arsenal...
Ooh.
By
one particular football...
Anyway, I wanted to mention Lavazzi because keep your eye on
lavazzi.co.uk. You deserve a ding for that one.
I didn't hear it, but I'll ding it anyway. The lavazzi.co.uk website because there's regular offers because we're coming up to Christmas. And you must join their mailing list and the various other fun things they have on their site, like you know, the writing part of it and stuff like that. It's really, really cool.
I recently got on the mailing list, and yeah, it's really kind of neat. I do have to say it's one of the nicer of the mailing lists.
It is.
Where it doesn't feel like a mailing list. It feels like, oh, hey, we just thought we'd send it, you know. And it's really cool. And I like the stuff. And, I mean, it's far from me, but, yeah. You know. I do love their stuff. I love window shopping.
And also I'd like to give a shout out to iwheroes.co.uk. It's a lovely little shop anyway, but I did post a video of Rob opening up one of their deliveries, which was, I think is one of the internet sensations. It's a great fun seeing what he's come to get delivered. So, but you can see those. Sign up to their Facebook page. I think they'll be quite surprised by how many international people will now start joining their Facebook page. But you can just watch Rob open. It's like at Christmas every day when they get one of their deliveries in, because there's some really fun pops coming out. I have a bag over here. No, it isn't the wife. That's a bit mean. Oh, by Burnley Nearly Scored. Yeah, I've got a bag here. This is a particular for the... Oh, it's got my name on it. I'll take it off. Where's me live feed? Is that still running? This one here, it's the Wonder Woman. It's a, like, I think it's a breast cancer.
Oh, great. For those special. Of us who don't have the live feed on.
But it's well, it doesn't matter. You can still see it. I'll save the live feed. We'll watch it later. On the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast Facebook group, which you can join.
Which you can join.
Yes, it's a pink Wonder Woman for breast cancer. And for Isabella, I don't think she should be watching. She should be gaming. It's a brand new 11 from Stranger Things. It's a con special. There's a lot of these con specials floating around because obviously all the cons were
brand new 11. You mean other than Matt Smith?
Yes. Stranger Things.
Is that funny?
Dork.
No, probably not.
Never seen it.
No.
You should watch it, Kirby. I only watch a select number of shows.
Well, that should be in your select number of shows.
Oh, you should watch Stranger Things. That's a given.
I watched the first episode. Didn't get into it.
What? Yeah, same here, Kirby.
Do you know what? My mum said that once about a film called American Beauty. She watched the first half hour and didn't watch the rest of it. Well, concentrate and watch it.
Yes.
Well, I watched almost the whole first season and it just never put its hooks in me yet. So yeah, I haven't
that's a whole
any
series.
Work.
But with Stranger Things, you know, I think you really do need to just sit tight, watch episode 1 and 2, and then... That's it, really.
I'll try again.
No.
Well, I think one of the things is, no offense, but we're kind of 80s kids. And that... No, but there's an appeal and nostalgia level that's really geared to you know, to my era, you know, of when we grew up. And we were that age.
I'm a double fan, so I not me.
Yeah, like, and I was born
and Dragons
in the other...
and E.T. and Ghostbusters and all of that. It's all in there.
Except so, I was
born at
things.
I was born at the other end of the 80s, so I don't get the 80s nostalgia. My mom, who grew up in the 70s and 80s, she loves the show. So maybe it's a generational thing.
I don't think it's a fantastic show, but I think I am definitely kind of right in their sights as far as I was
most active in my various science fiction fandom stuff in the 80s, so maybe I will like it.
I think you will. I'm surprised you haven't.
No, it's very, very good. And you can, what's something with Winona Ryder in? It's got to be really good, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think it's a matter of finding time. I mean, I barely have time to watch the stuff that I do watch.
I hear you. I've dropped off all of the CW shows. I did get caught up on Legends, but I can't be bothered trying to get caught up on Arrow or Flash or anything at the moment. It's just like there's so much stuff.
I've got a stack of stuff.
And I'm going to start Supernatural with Tom because he's not seen it.
I've never seen it.
It'd be interesting going back 15 years.
I've never seen it either, although my wife is really into it. So
I've tried watching Supernatural. Somebody is going to have to explain to me the appeal of it, to be honest. But it's another one of those shows. It's just not for me, I guess.
I saw about five episodes when I was in hospital, and it was quite good. But then I went back to the, I went to start watching it, and I'm like, ooh, I just got put off.
There's only one hospital, the same way there's only one football.
Anyway, I've got to go now. I'm sorry to interrupt you all, y'all.
But we have to go.
No, the thing is, my dog is shivering, and the last time we did that, he peed in the front room, and I've got to now try and investigate if he has actually done that.
See, you ruined that joke, Kirby.
yes, I did.
And there was another...
That's my job.
You just lost it at the end. It was a good joke before.
I had to audibly tell him off for licking the fleece that I allowed him to lie on.
Sorry, I thought you were talking about Kirby again.
No, I was talking about my dog licking stuff. Right then, so I'm going to get going so as I can empty the dogs and then get a bath and
you squeeze them or what?
Then I will try and watch the episode of Star Trek Discovery that Robert put me off because now there's two episodes that I'm behind now, but I don't know. I'm sort of... I feel as if I... Yeah, I it's different with Doctor Who. I love Doctor Who more than I do Star Trek. So
I love Mando.
If somebody tells me something's rubbish, I don't really want to watch it. You know what I mean?
Ignore anyone who says something's rubbish.
Well, I can't. I don't, because my time is precious. I don't want to waste it watching something that's rubbish.
Mandalorian is the best Star Wars I have seen in a very, very, very long time.
Absolutely.
I'm not talking about Mandalorian. I'm talking about Star Trek Discovery.
We're talking about Mandalorian.
Well, I'm not. Right, I'm going
to
go.
I told you last week to get over it and watch. Right?
I should say Grogu in the house now.
Yeah, well, it's a week gone. We shouldn't have to tell you the same thing again.
Right. Anyway, so thank you for watching this. Oh, for God's sake.
Yeah, we're doing the bickering afterwards.
I'm going to have to make a jingle up for me to say good night and then just cut it off. Right. Anyway, where do we get up to? Oh, my TV's off. I can hear rumblings elsewhere in the house, so this is a bit worrying. Good. Anyway, so until next week, where we'll be talking about Curse of Fatal Death, thank you for listening, watching, take a party on the show. Please keep the feedback coming in. Goodbye.
Goodbye, fancy pants.
Bye.
So long. Thanks for all the fish.
Scarecrow.
I said that.
Oh.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production sponsored by whowon.co.uk and lavazzi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.